oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket today. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 10-0002, Samuel T. Jackson versus State Office of Administrative Hearings from Travis County and the Second Court of Appeals District, and 10, matter 238, NRA Universal Underwriters of Texas Insurance Company, an original proceeding, and Justice Lehrman is not sitting in that case. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side for these arguments and will take a brief recess between them. These arguments are being recorded, and there will be a link to the arguments on our website by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument in the first matter, Jackson versus State Office of Administrative Hearings.
May it please the court, Mr. Jackson will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please this honorable court, Jackson, and I'm the pro se petitioner in this cause. I'm also a licensed attorney, so that probably means that I've got a fool for a client. The court won't hold that against me. The case before us, Your Honors, represents an egregious incursion on the rights to public access, of the public's access, to court documents, specifically court opinions, court orders, and court decisions. Ostensibly, the case involves the public's right of access to opinions and decisions rendered by the State Office of Administrative Hearings in cases involving the suspension of licenses for failure to pay child support. Realistically, this case affects the public's access to a huge number of administrative and governmental documents. So this case goes far beyond the withholding of the SOA court orders and of their decisions.
Is there any administrative office, like a clerk's office or any place that you can go to see a decision in one of these license suspension cases?
No, Your Honor. These cases are considered closed to the public. So there's no, according to the Attorney General, there's no access to them.
Does SOA keep the records?
Yes, they do. So it keeps records, and the Attorney General's Child Support Division also maintains copies of these court orders and opinions.
Do you know in each of these cases who the lawyers were, who the parties were, and it would it be possible to get any of that information from the participants?
No, the Your Honor, the request was made for all cases handled by SOA. Regarding the suspension of license.
So, well, if you were, let's say the case is my case, and so it issues a decision, I could go to the newspaper and say, here's the decision, right? I mean, I could release it. It's just so that's not releasing it, correct?
Your Honor, according to the argument by the State Office of Administrative Hearing, I don't believe that that information would be available through any source. The statute that the state claims actually prohibits them from distributing this information is found in Texas Family Code Chapter 231.108. And that state statute basically says that all all documents, all files, all records maintained by the Office of the Attorney General for the purpose of these child support cases is confidential. So their claim is that this statute is omnipotent. It protects the this information regardless of the source, regardless of the form, or regardless of the forum. So according to them, these documents are off limits completely.
So argues that it's not a court. It would be, of course, unheard of for any public court, district court, appellate court, this court, to say its orders and opinions are not public record, but it says we're not a court. Does that affect your analysis?
Not at all, Your Honor. The fact that SOA is not a court does not negate the fact that they are a state agency. And there is a statutory requirement, mandatory requirement for the state to provide specifically court orders, opinions, and decisions for public inspection. That's under the Texas Administrative Procedures Act. And that statute is mandatory. There are no exceptions to this statute. And it basically says that the state agency shall make available for public inspection these court orders, these opinions, and these decisions. The only place where that argument might have some relevance is that another rule of civil procedure,
76A.
76A does speak to court documents, and I believe it restricts it to district and county courts. And in that, of course, that rule requires that no opinions or decisions may be sealed under any circumstances. It doesn't allow them to be sealed. SOA argues that since they're not a court, 76A does not apply to them. But I believe it does have relevance, because if their argument prevails, that does affect other court documents. The district and county courts in this state also handle child support cases. They also do license suspension cases. And so under 76A, those courts would not be allowed to seal those records. But under the Attorney General's argument, they would, since they're not a court.
Well, under 76A, you can seal the records, you just have to have a proper showing. There is that potential out there on a proper showing.
On court records, that's correct, Your Honor. But on decisions and opinions, no. The rule specifically states that these may not be sealed. So they remain open to the public under all circumstances.
Of the records that you seek here, is there an aspect of those records that would be subject to sealing and an aspect that isn't?
Not the records that I'm seeking. The information that I'm seeking that I sought in the request were court orders, decisions, and opinions. I did not request any additional items, other court orders. But
and the court orders tend to be pretty thorough and contain other types of confidential information that you normally would not find in a traditional order or in another type of case. Isn't that usually the case?
Your Honor, I don't believe so, with all due respect. The information that is contained in these orders and that would be contained in the decision is information that is directly obtained from the Attorney General's office, which in turn receives that information from court documents.
May I ask you, how do you suggest that the office would deal with 231.108, which states that the agency may not release information on the physical location of a person if a protective order has been entered or there's reason to believe that the release of the information may result in physical or emotional harm? How do you suggest that would be dealt with?
Well, It does not, again, affect the right of the public to the court's, to the administration's decisions and opinions. We've argued here, Your Honor, that Section 231-108 does not have any application to the availability of court orders and decisions or opinions.
So you're suggesting that that information shouldn't be redacted?
It depends on the nature of the information. Now, the statute seeks to protect the the parent in this case from someone getting that information and causing some harm to that individual. Ordinarily, that's the spouse or father of the children. But that is a very limited restriction, and it does not apply to these cases. And the reason that I say that are twofold. One, the statute itself precludes application to the court orders and decisions maintained by SOA. The language itself indicates that the prohibition is for records and files under this subchapter. That's subchapter 231-108 or subchapter 231. The documents that we seek are a result of Family Code Section 232, an entirely different statute. So the state is making an attempt to apply the 231 requirements to a 232 proceeding. And so I believe that the statute itself excludes application of this 231-108 to the availability of court orders and decisions. Now, the state contends, as I said, that this statute is omnipotent. And under the state's interpretation, then, that would mean that the entire body of information that comes into the Attorney General's hands in pursuit of child support cases would be off limits to the public. They're claiming that the statute that says all files and all records for services provided under this section or under this subchapter includes everything that they get. So nothing that comes into the hands of the Attorney General for the purpose of child support enforcement would be unavailable. And that includes any circumstance. Now here, we're discussing the access to court documents. But application of this statute, as they claim, would deny access to any types of information, whether there may be other types of information under 552.022. Contracts, vouchers, any number of those 18 enumerated documents that are included in 552.002. So their entire argument is that nothing is available. Now,
what about the recovery of attorney's fees? Recovery of attorney's fees?
Yes, sir.
For in this situation for someone
that Justice McGinn, I think is a little more difficult argument because this court has given no guidance in this area, and there have been no cases in point on whether or not a pro se attorney PIA cases can get attorney's fees. Now the state argues that the pro se attorney does not incur any fees, and that is one of the requirements of the statute, that they are entitled to reimbursement for fees incurred, attorney's fees that are incurred during the proceedings. We argue, however, Justice, that costs are also available. Not just attorney's fees. Costs are available under the statute. Now, if the court determines that no attorney's fees have been incurred, that does not mean that costs have not been incurred. And I believe that any pro se attorney who involves himself in this type of litigation, as you can see, we're at the Supreme Court, so you can imagine the number of steps that have been generated prior to this appearance. That takes time. That takes time away from that attorney's own practice, and it takes time away from other activities that he might become engaged.
Mr. Jackson, I see that your time has expired. Are there any other questions? We'll hear from you on rebuttal. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondents.
Please, the court, Ms. Loudermilk will present the argument for the respondents.
Thank you. May it please the court. Mr. Jackson is correct when he says that this case will probably go way beyond the administrative orders and decisions that he has requested. And he's correct when SOA and the Attorney General's office, as their attorney, say that the entire body of Title IV-D information is confidential under state and federal law. It's very clear. Section 231.108 says that all information in the hands of a Title IV-D agency, which the Attorney General is, and SOA is, acting under the contract between the two parties, is a Title IV-D agency, and federal law has mandated that if you participate in the child support enforcement program, then a Title IV-D agency has to maintain, collect the information solely for Title IV-D purposes and release it only to authorized persons.
He's not asking for that. He's asking for the order, the decisions and orders.
Yes, sir. But the administrative orders are Title IV-D information. His request...
What information in the Title IV-D orders is confidential?
All of it, Your Honor, because it relates...
That it occurred in SOA, that's confidential?
The Section 231.108 says that all files and records of Title IV services are confidential, and that
it seems kind of stretching it to say that it's a service to suspend your license.
That is the tool. It is defined in 231.108 that enforcement and collection of child support is a service. That is the way. That's the federal scheme, and that's the state scheme.
As we're talking here, a transcript is being made. A transcript is being made of the argument, and part of what we're talking about is Title IV procedures and decisions. Is all of that confidential too?
Not the procedures, Your Honor.
And any information that is in the order, that even if it's of a public nature, that you say is confidential.
It's not of a public nature under the statutes that we're talking about. The information that has been obtained and is reflects what's in those orders was obtained through the Title IV-D process.
How is the public supposed to assure accountability of SOA in these Title IV matters if they are excluded from viewing the documents, the orders and decisions?
I'm not sure that the public has a role in that accountability. The legislature does. There are required reportings that the Texas legislature has set out, as well as the federal government.
So those decisions go to the legislature?
No, they don't go to the legislature. They will. SOA maintains the orders and decisions that it makes for its records. The entire case files go back to the Attorney General's office, and that information is maintained there.
What information in the orders and opinions is sensitive, private, personal, sensitive information? Are there Social Security numbers in the orders?
Yes, sir.
There are. There are none in the documents.
Some of them may be, maybe not in the...
In all the ones you sent us, there's not a Social Security number.
The total count...
Why do you say yes when they're not in here?
Your Honor, I apologize. I thought I had looked through those and they could be in there, but there are...
They could be, but they're not. What other information is in here?
Medical condition.
In one order.
Living situation.
In one order.
Those are representative samples, Your Honor.
Yes.
There are a total of 128 decisions.
All right.
Can sensitive information that could affect the safety of children or parents involved be redacted from orders and opinions?
Mr. Jackson has asked for the entire order, not specific information.
I understand.
This court might pursue that. The 231.108 and 42 U.S.C. 654.26 doesn't contemplate parsing. The scope of those two statutes is any information relating to Title 4D.
Practically, it would not be difficult to redact a home address of a child or some information that could be deemed putting at risk some person, like a home address. Practically, it wouldn't be hard to redact that from 128 orders.
That's true, Your Honor.
I wonder why it would be necessary to put the home address of a child in an order suspending an adult's driver's license, for example. I mean, you could do it. You could put it in there. But if the only purpose is to make these orders confidential, it seems like that's counterproductive.
I don't disagree with you, Your Honor. In the representative sample, I did not find any addresses in there.
So I'm wondering if you're going to suspend a person's professional license or driver's license or whatever, why do you need medical information and the addresses of children and things of that nature in there?
Go ahead and answer that question.
I'm not sure the why. That is the background, the...
I guess the question I'm asking is if SOA or someone wants to keep things confidential, they can load it up with all kinds of confidential information. But why should that be the situation, simply to keep these things confidential?
Well, that's not the reason why that information is in there. It's maintained confidential because the way we read the statute requires us to do it or jeopardize
the... statute requires you to put that in an order?
No, but it requires any information that is obtained through the Title 4D program to be maintained confidential.
Well, let me ask... Go ahead.
In some types of orders relating to child support enforcement, the trial courts make findings, and in fact, the Family Code sometimes requires certain findings to be contained in orders, findings that may be confidential. Are there any types of findings or conclusions of law that are made in these types of orders at issue?
That are required?
Or that are typically made, even though they may not be in your representative sample? You mentioned medical condition. Does
the trial court
make those types of findings and include them in the order, although normally that wouldn't be the case?
One of the decisions that you will find in this is a order staying a suspension or vacating a suspension. And there is more background information, findings of fact, that support that suspension. And that's where I at least saw there's more personal information that normally would not be provided out to the public.
So typically the court issues those in a separate document. Is this the type of order that would contain those findings, whereas otherwise you would have to file a request, et cetera? I guess that's my question.
Yes, Your Honor.
But SOA's general counsel submitted an affidavit that says the decisions and interim orders that arise from those referrals, these 40 referrals, of necessity also contain personal and identifying information on these individuals. And in many of these documents that have been submitted under seal, there's no identifying information whatsoever or other personal information. And in all but one of them, the only identifying information is the driver's license number.
There is the name.
Well, yes. The name is confidential?
The orders are confidential and the information in them.
Are you aware of any other agency decision in the country that is confidential?
I don't want this to come out as a smart remark, Your Honor, but
other Title 4D proceedings in other states we would submit are confidential.
But anything else? Any antitrust, securities, FCC, trade?
I'm not familiar with those proceedings,
anything,
Your Honor.
Any state agency decision, railroad commission, anything that's confidential?
No, and the reasoning behind that is because the information that is contained in the Title IV records, including these orders, and some of them are innocuous, I will agree, came from private sources in many instances, from family members who gave this information, not just from court records. There's no evidence in the record that the only information that's in these administrative orders and the final Title IV-D information that the Attorney General maintains came solely from a suit by a parent-child relationship over in the courts. In fact, the Attorney General has administrative subpoena power to request information about a delinquent obligor from many sources, from banks, other financial institutions, from other agencies that may have that information. And then as you can see by some of the orders, some of that is private information that you wouldn't normally see in a governmental situation.
Isn't that true with orders that come from the 40 agencies but go through the regular channel of the courts?
You mean through the courts?
Mm-hmm.
And that what is true?
In other words, the kind of information that you're talking about is the same kind of information that is used by the 40 agency when it goes through the regular channel of the district court.
That may be very well true. And the federal government and the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement recently, not recently, it was 2008, promulgated rules on the privacy aspect of it. They were not made effective until December 31st of this year, but they offer guidance as to the participating states as to what is the scope of this confidentiality. And the scope, their definition of confidential information is any information relating to an individual. And there was one commenter that stated that there's an inconsistency here. Some of this information may be public in the court system. You can go get it there. It's the conflict between the public information laws and the regulation.
Let me just posit this question to you. Let's say that, and this isn't your agency, I know this. This isn't how you operate. But let's say there's 10 years from now, a rogue administrative office that is arbitrarily suspending licenses of lawyers but not doing the same for drivers and just doing that to such an extent that it would be an equal protection violation. How is the party who is subject to that arbitrariness to expose it? How do they learn that that SOA is violating their equal protection rights?
Parties are not denied due process in these administrative proceedings. All of the contested case procedures in SOA are required to be followed in the license suspension. They are a participant. They are entitled to bring witnesses. They get copies of their own orders.
Of their own, but how do they know that they're being treated differently than another class of people?
They don't, but that's not usually unless they can make it a protected class, that's usually not grounds for overturning a suspension.
Okay, well, let's make it a protected class, that all African-Americans' licenses are suspended and no one else's. How are they to be able to show that? How do they learn?
I do not know, but I would suspect that it would be available in a court of law. That type of information would be available.
Well, but I'm just saying, if all of the orders and decisions are secret, how is that information ever to come to light?
That doesn't necessarily prevent a court from subpoenaing that type of information. What we're talking about here is a system of maintaining Title IV-D information in the Title IV-D program and the stricture to those agencies that operate that program to maintain the confidentiality and to not disclose it to interested third parties who are not part of the process. There are other systems that are like that. The criminal history record information, DPS and the federal government can only release that information to authorized persons.
But he's not asking for that. He's asking for the decisions. And in the criminal system, all of the decisions are available to the public. It would be unheard of to have a judgment in a criminal case to be sealed.
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor.
National security or something.
I do disagree that these orders are on an equal level with court orders. This court in the Red Flag or the Red Fern Flag case has said that administrative agencies exercising contested case procedures are not courts, even though they exercise a quasi-judicial function, that they are administering a executive function in that sense.
Well, what if we disagree with your position on this and rule that these records are publicly available? What is the effect of that? You mentioned there are federal agencies. Is there federal money involved that would be lost or something like that if we were to not comply with some?
I know the Attorney General would be very concerned with that, and we're concerned with the scope of the order, and we're looking to you for a decision. However, if the federal government would find that we're not in compliance with Section 654.26 because we do let out this, the state has ordered that this information be released. We currently receive approximately $257 million funds through the child support process. We receive $486 million funds for the temporary assistance to needy families. All of that is at risk.
But isn't 654.26 more directory? In other words, it requires safeguards, privacy safeguards, to be in place, but it doesn't expressly say that opinions and orders not be. So, for example, if a privacy safeguard could be that we will redact information regarding, address and bank account numbers and that sort of thing. Wouldn't that be in compliance with that section?
656 says that the safeguards have to include the unauthorized use or disclosure of information relating to proceedings or actions, including enforcement and collection of child support. It's information, and does it come within the scope of that statute? The child suspension proceedings are Title IV proceedings to enforce child support. So we think it's fairly reasonable within the scope of that these administrative orders and decisions fit within that safeguard.
Counsel, let me ask you, going strict to the statute, 231.108A says, except as provided by subsection C, the information, the files and records are confidential. Subsection C says the Title IV agency may use or release information from the files and records, including information resulting from a communication made by a recipient of financial assistance, for purposes directly connected with the administration of the child support, paternity determination, parent locator, etc. So A says, except for the purposes in C, it's confidential. C says you may use or release it. Now, why would Chapter 232, a different chapter, not come within the scope of the exception provided there for C? It says that you may use or release the information. So that's not confidential. It specifically says it's not confidential. So if you use it or release it in order to suspend a license under Chapter 232, how is it still confidential? It seems like that specifically might cover it.
It's clear, though it's sometimes muddy in the regulations and the statutes, that a Title IV agency can use Title IV information for a purpose, just as you have indicated, for a Title IV purpose. But a release under the Public Information Act to a person that's not involved in the process is not a release under Title IV.
But what my question is, under A, that makes it confidential, A specifically says subpart C is accepted from being confidential. So if you use that in Chapter 232, it seems to me like it that the statute itself pulls it out of the confidentiality mode. And you can choose what you have to use. You may not want to use everything you have, but what you do choose to put into Chapter 232 proceedings seems like is accepted from being confidential. And it's the choice of the agency how much of that you disclose. Am I misunderstanding that?
No, I don't think you are. And I think that by the language the Title IV-D agency may use or release, it's the choice of the Attorney General.
Right. And whatever you choose or release, it seems like, is made not confidential under the exception in A. That's what's troubling me. I guess I must be misunderstanding something.
No, we haven't chose to release it. Let me say this, and I have only started reading the federal rules. They're comprehensive and complex and sometimes not very clear. I do think the conclusion that I have reached in this is that a Title IV-D agency can release the information only for Title IV-D purposes, and that's what this is about. Mr. Jackson mentioned in response about keeping the location of information.
Let me interrupt you just a moment. Isn't suspending a license Title IV-D purpose?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you release the information, and that's a Title IV-D purpose.
But we didn't release, I would not agree that we released it in that sense. We used it in this Title IV-D purpose.
So you
the confidentiality is maintained. We haven't released it out to the public.
But if you use it for that purpose, isn't it accepted from being confidential by this plain language of subpart A? Except as provided by subchapter C, that information is confidential.
I would not agree with that interpretation, Your Honor.
May I just ask you real quickly, have courts in other states decided this issue?
There are no cases specifically on this issue.
As a general matter, should courts indulge, pardon me, in sort of a general construction presumption that statutes about confidentiality ought to be construed narrowly?
Yes.
As a general matter.
I think this court has in A&T Consultants that first came out in Texas law, that you look at, of course, the plain language of the statute, unless it calls for another type of construction, then you do construe it narrowly. The problem that you have with this statute, it's like one of the many broad statutes. It's broad, relating to, concerning, captures a huge a bit of information. I see my time has expired. We think we are construing the statute properly. We ask the court to affirm the decision of the lower courts. Thank you.
The federal regulations are under 42 U.S. Code 654.
Your Honor, I have that cite for you. They are at 73 Federal Register 54222.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Jackson, you don't want to risk hundreds of millions of dollars of federal funds, do you?
No, sir.
And how are you not doing that, in your opinion?
Because the federal statute, Your Honor, does not require withholding of the type of information that we seek. But specifically, it does not require the withholding of opinions and decisions. You know, when we look at this case...
Maybe it's not quite that straightforward. If an opinion or decision includes looking at 42, 654, subsection 26B... that opinion or decision discloses the whereabouts of a party or the child, that could be a problem, right?
It could be, Your Honor.
Or disclose information about a parent or a child, looking at subsection E, that could be harmful to the parent or child.
Yes, sir.
That could be a problem.
Yes, sir.
So it could be a problem. How do you address that?
Your Honor, it could not be a problem with regard to the opinions and decisions because that type of information is not included in the opinions and decisions. Now, when SOA gets a case, it involves copies of the enforcement orders from the district court's office. It involves any orders that may have been in it by the district court's office or by the district courts, and that becomes part of the SOAR record. Those records may contain that type of information. So if you sought specifically those documents, if the Attorney General could show that there that type of information is in those documents, then there might be an issue. But with regard to opinions and decisions,
I know you haven't seen the documents under seal, but one of them does have health information and recites information about the person whose license is being suspended.
Your Honor, I think it's important that we understand that the inquiry here is restricted to access to court orders and decisions, not access to the other documentary information that may be included in the submission of those claims to SOAR. I'm not sure what the nature of the opinions that you have been presented, but I believe if you'll take a look at those, the only identifying information that you're going to find is the identifying information concerning the respondent. That's the person who is being prosecuted. His name might be involved there. In certain court orders where they are notifying him of hearings, his address may be included in that document. But it is not included in the opinions or decisions. And I would ask the court to take a good look at the documents that have been presented to the court for in-camera review to make note of that. The only identifying information in that document is the respondent's name and perhaps his license number. I don't believe Social Security numbers are included in there. Certainly no information regarding the custodial parent or the child is included in that document because it's not necessary.
Have you seen someone else's order or decision in a license suspension case?
Yes, sir. I've seen several of them. I was the administrative law judge for the Attorney General handling those cases before I went into private practice. So not only have I seen them, I have written some of them. I do think it's very important in this situation, in this case, that the court does recognize that we're not limited. If we look, accept the argument of the Attorney General, and that is that all information that is held by the Attorney General's office is confidential and therefore non-disclosable, then we're looking at a huge number of cases, administrative agencies, who could make the same claim. Because there are in excess of 900 statutes that declare certain information confidential. But it does not go to say that that confidentiality extends to court documents and opinions. If you look at the 231-108 closely, you'll see that there is no reference in that statute regarding license suspension, court orders, opinions, nothing there to tie that statute in with release of information under 2001.004 or 552.022.
We asked the Attorney General, do you have any information about how other states treat these kinds of orders?
Your Honor, this is a unique situation. No other state that I'm aware of, and I have researched it, has declared that administrative court orders and opinions are accepted from disclosure. Now,
have
this
they gone
state,
the other way, though? Have they said they're not?
I
found anything where they say they're
I
not?
I have not found a case that even entertains that issue, Your Honor.
Either way, no. Going one way or the other.
But I think that it is important to note in that regard that, again, we're talking about decisions and opinions. No court, I don't believe, is ready to determine that that is not the case. Now,
you said you function as an administrative. Could the opinions be written and then have the information, any specific identifying information as to children and other parties except for the respondent in that proceeding taken out of the order? As Justice Guzman suggested, maybe a separate order with findings, if you needed findings in them, something of that nature. Could it be done? Could the department arrange that?
Your Honor, I think it could be done, but I think that would be in derogation of the two statutes mandating disclosure of that information. 2001-004-3 makes no exceptions. Now, there is one exception that the Department of Insurance has, and that is because they've been excluded from the definition of state agency. That is the only agency that does not have to follow that mandate. Every other state agency has to make that information available. It's mandatory and non-discretionary. So any state agency that fails to provide that information is in violation of that statute. And if I may just say this, Your Honor, 552.022, I think, should be the focal point of this decision. I really don't think that there's much question about the application of 2001.004, but that only protects court orders and decisions. Chapter 552.022 talks about all types of documents that courts, contracts, and so forth that the state agency may engage in that would also be excluded from access to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Any further questions?
The pause is
submitted then, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.